because it's wire food stories, rip and read stories. There's no time devoted to developing them.
Let me. This one is probably more directed to the FCC, but I'm going to give it to Bob. The court's insistence upon qualitative data seems increasingly restrictive. Admitting qualitative studies could promote useful insights in the kinds of issues the FCC is responsible for maintaining. So, should we be opening this thing up for qualitative analysis or anecdotal?
Well, qualitative and quantitative aren't really, there's not a strict line between them. The two really overlap pretty closely, so it's not a black-white issue. It's really a gradation of gray issue. And I think the very issue we've been debating, that Juan and Dennis have talked about, on one hand, you can show quantitative research showing there's more local news coverage, perhaps, on a station. There's more minutes of programming. On the other hand, if you look like Downey and Kaiser do at the actual content, or Amy does at the actual content, much of it's, you know, about donkeys getting shampoos or about Winona Ryder, you know, new facelift or something. And that's, you know, one of those is qualitative, one of those is quantitative. Now, you can say, well, that's irrelevant what the content is. It's just the quantity is important. But obviously it is important what the content of the news is. For example, Charles Lewis, who spoke in the first session, his group, the Center for Public Integrity, has done some fairly detailed analysis of the exact nature of local news coverage in this country, of local governance. And what they found is appalling, that basically local government in this country, city, state government, is covered in our news media in a way that would make a tyrant envious. There's such little reporting actually going on, hard reporting.
Not on TV.
But the works, in this case. That study wasn't meant for this as a general study. But the point is, so how you define qualitative and quantitative goes a long way. But those are both relevant ways to look at the subject.
All right, let me throw this back at you. You want these guys deciding what is good news and bad news?
The point that all the commissioners have made, and this is absolutely central, which is this issue goes way beyond their talents. And it goes beyond my talents or any of our talents. This is the sort of issue of such paramount importance. It demands congressional involvement, involves lots of studies and debate. There are always going to be trade-offs. There's not a perfect answer to make everyone happy. But the more public involvement there is, the more study, the more debate, the more likely we'll get a good answer. The more the issues resolved in the way, as Charles Lewis has chronicled, these issues are traditionally resolved behind closed doors with powerful special interests deciding it. I mean, I think it's hilarious that we're in a situation where when only half the participants represent the industry, it's considered unbalanced. Because these guys are so used to having the whole table. Just have to share it. It's like, whoa, what's this all about?
Robert McChesney, University of Illinois.
You know, I think the more the public's involved, the better the answer is going to be by definition. It doesn't mean everyone's all necessarily like, but there'll be ones I could live with. This will be democratic.
Well, here's my next question. How much coverage of these hearings are being covered by the major media, television and radio? This is one of Commissioner Copps's issues. Why doesn't the big media cover this big issue, Dennis?
Well, I think it's a case where you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If we come to this hearing and carry it in great detail, by the time it gets on our air, we'll be accused of bias or prejudice or trying to sway the public to our direction. Hard, probably for the audience to believe that I was actually educated in the university that the professor next to me teaches in. Actually, the views at that time were pretty much the same as Bob is articulating now. I'd like to respond to some of the criticism down the table a bit. If we can get solid enterprise reporting in any of the news departments that we're responsible for, that's absolutely our goal. There are kind of a couple of ways you can get news. Some of it just comes off the day book. You know the mayor's going to hold a news conference, so you go there. I've just been at Viacom for a few months now, but previous to that, I ran WNBC here in New York, and we went to a beat system. You know, we had an education reporter. We had an investigative team. We covered City Hall with three or four correspondents, depending upon the day. And that's why our news, I believe, in New York went to leadership position The one thing that you know if you run a local television station is if you have a solid news department and you're serving your community, not just through news, but also through community-oriented programming, you also know that if you have a diverse workforce and that you have a diversity of opinions going into the formulation of that news so that it isn't all just coming out of a couple of minds, then the chances are you're going to be successful. And that's a formula that has worked in my experience, whether it was in Los Angeles, whether it was in Chicago, or whether it was in New York. Columbia graded local news. At WNBC, it was interesting. We didn't get graded that high for our 11 o'clock news because they said we had too much national news and not enough local. We tried to point out to them that in New York City, what is national in many other markets elsewhere in the United States tends to be more local here in New York because of the diversity of the population. It is subjective. You can argue it back and forth. But the one constant that remains is the better you are locally with your coverage in news and the better you outreach with community events and the more diverse your workforce is in formulating the coverage that you have, the more likely you are to be successful in your local market. And that is the principle which we govern ourselves by, at least by Viacom television station.
Dennis Swanson, who is Executive Vice President of Viacom. Well, in the audience apparently making reference to the fact that this is being covered live on Pacifica.
I speaking for myself, I would like to see 60 Minutes or somebody tackle this issue and give this some national exposure. All right. Yes, please use the card. Well, here's another one for Dennis, and essentially is if your station group is driven by profits, and if that's the case, questioner here is saying that if that's the case, aren't you necessarily not addressing the issues of the poor?
Well, I think I could spend a long time answering that question. We just recently, I don't know why somebody at CBS didn't address this a long time ago, but when they built the Sears Tower in Chicago, for example, the CBS antenna was on the Hancock Building, and a lot of Chicago was blocked from getting an adequate signal. And we just spent $6 million to raise our antenna on the John Hancock Building. And the net result is that we're just a little higher than the Sears Tower, and now it improves the signal quality for CBS dramatically in Chicago, and hopefully that's a solid business decision. One of the concerns I've had in New York, because in the World Trade Center disaster, all of New York television lost its antenna, both analog and digital. CBS had a backup facility on the Empire State Building. And an issue that I've raised, we have struggled long and hard since then to find an adequate site for an antenna. And the people that are not being served the best now in New York would be the disadvantaged, because most of them or many of them would not be serviced by cable. So yes, it's a legitimate issue to ask about things like that, but I would hope, at least here in New York, we could resolve our differences between the FAA and the city and state of New York and New Jersey, and find a way to build an adequate antenna so that all the television viewers here could be served.
Bob?
Answer a little bit to the center of the question. I think this goes right to what the commission needs to be concerned with, which is, how well the journalism provided by the licensees serves the entire population. And I think one of the trends we've seen with the over the past 20 years, perhaps due to concentration and conglomeration of ownership, is in that journalism has increasingly put to commercial principles, which means serving the dominant market where you can make the most money. So the idea of journalism serving the entire population equally as citizens in democracy is faded, and so we've seen as a result the rise of business journalism to an extraordinary role in our news media compared to what it was 20 years ago, because that's the most lucrative audience. A relatively small percentage of the population. The interests of the poor and working class have basically fallen from view in our news media. Just commercially, they don't make a lot of sense. Now, that might not be an issue that seems of importance to the FCC, but it exactly is, because it goes directly to the heart of the public interest journalism on news media. And to the extent concentration and conglomeration accentuate that problem or have any contribution to it, it's absolutely at the center of what they're doing. And I think the decline of labor coverage, the decline of concern with issues of interest to poor people, this is something we can stack quantitative study on top of each other as high as the Sears Tower.
Well, I would challenge that remark in that, again, I go back to my experiences when I just ran a television station. We assigned beat reporters in the Bronx and in the Queens and in Brooklyn and in on Long Island and in New Jersey to create just exactly, Professor, what you're alluding to, so that we would serve the entire population of our DMA, not just some segment of it. And it's why we went to specific kinds of coverage for the Jewish community, the Asian community, the Afro-American community, the Hispanic community, because in the coverage, not just, and that's why I address my remarks about a diverse workforce, because a diverse workforce is more likely to do that than a non-diverse workforce. And given the diversity of the population today, it's imperative if you're going to be successful in our business to serve not just one element of your viewing audience, but across the board.
Amy, do you have any research that addresses that?
Well, certainly what I spoke of briefly earlier is the amount of product placement that we see in the news now. And we look particularly at the network morning shows in doing this, but it was astronomical to a large extent to see that a third of the content, excluding the paid commercials, but a third of the content is selling something, whether it's a book, or, the people are put on, interviews are done to sell a certain product, and that the greatest percentage of products for each of the networks was products that their own parent company owned, and in most cases were products that the person watching, the consumer, didn't know their parent company owned. Disclosure was not there, and it's hard to keep track, as we saw from Commissioner Copps's vastly intricate chart at the beginning of the session, who owns what these days. And the fact that their product in there is one issue. The fact that they're owned by that company is another, and then they're not disclosed, I think shows the extent to which we're getting commercialism inside these programmings and not necessarily addressing the need to provide information to those who need it.
If I can piggyback on that, and I'd like to toss it to Dennis in the interest of debate on this issue. Are you concerned about the increasing invasion of those news segments by the demands of the rest of the corporation for either promoting the movie of the movie studio that the corporation is a part of, or the use of the news segments to, in essence, break down the line between entertainment and news and public responsibility aspects of these stations?
Juan Gonzalez.
Well, I can only speak for the stations that we have some degree of responsibility over, but there would be no mandates in my time at Viacom relative to what you've just articulated. Not all of our stations are doing movie reviews, but there is no mandate to do movie reviews of Paramount movies simply because they're part of the Viacom empire. We would do movie reviews across the board from any studio, including an independent studio, if that movie was picked by the movie critic as part of his or her program.
One additional piece of data to the issue that Juan raised. In the local, the surveys that we did of the local TV news directors, we did see a growing, a sense of growing commercial influence, and that more than half of the news directors in the annual surveys report that advertisers are now trying to influence their news content. In addition, we see advertisers looking for new alternative commercials, such as cross-promotions with TV stations, like a health expo, having the weather sponsored by so-and-so, and now bumpers, which are ads that look like public announcements, which run in between the regular advertisers, the regular commercials, and the newscasts.
Dennis?
Well, I think that... if there is going to be, advertisers have been trying to influence television programming since television was created, and the part of the responsibility of a news director is to ward off that kind of invasion if it involves the integrity of his or her product. I think it would be a greater concern in a smaller market than in a larger market. There's really no one single advertiser in the larger markets that should be able to intimidate a local television station. The one example I always sort of use, and this is a network example, but the largest category of advertisers in the United States are automobiles. And these primetime magazine shows, you know, they do the auto crash test of the week. So that would fly in the face of what their sales department is doing. And I understand the criticism, and, you know, we've heard it for 40-plus years. But I really think that if a news director stands his ground or her ground and works with the general manager, it shouldn't be the issue to the extent that you've articulated it.
Well, I have some more questions, but we have run out of time. But before we let you go, I have some housekeeping here. When you came in, you were supposed to get a list of some nearby restaurants.
Well, that's not especially relevant for people listening around the country. You probably know where all your restaurants are. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's live broadcast of Forum on Media Ownership and the proposed changes in media ownership before the Federal Communications Commission. The moderator of this panel has been Harry Jessel, New York editor-in-chief of Broadcasting and Cable Magazine. The panelists whose voices you heard were Amy Mitchell, Associate Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. She's the only woman's voice you heard. The man defending the company's practices was Dennis Swanson, Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of Viacom Television Stations. Robert McChesney was also speaking. He's professor at the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, author of many media books, including Rich Media and Poor Democracy, and Juan Gonzalez, who is president of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, columnist for the New York Daily News, and co-host of Democracy Now! We will continue this broadcast through this afternoon on many of these same stations, as they say. I'm Larry Bensky at KPFA in Berkeley, California. Joining me is Robert Knight at WBAI in New York. And after a brief break, we'll be bringing you highlights from this morning's testimony. It's not testimony, this morning's presentation. This is not a formal FCC hearing. It's a forum organized by the Columbia University Law School. There will be an FCC formal hearing into this matter sometime in February. We may be bringing you that as well here on Pacifica. So we'll bring you those highlights. We'll also be talking to several guests. Robert Knight has an important interview about digital democracy and the implications of it, and we'll also be taking listener phone-ins. So stay tuned to this Pacifica radio station. We'll be right back. listening to Pacifica stations KPFA and KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, WBAI in New York, and WPFW in Washington, and maybe KPFT in Houston and KPFK in Los Angeles. Kind of network we are. Not quite sure who's there when, but we're here, aren't we, Robert? Robert, we're here, aren't we?
Yes, indeed we are.
Okay.
From New York City.
Robert is not at the Columbia Forum. He's in the studios of WBAI. I'm not at the Columbia Forum either. I'm 3,000 miles away. But we've been following it intently, and we're going to bring you some of what was said this morning and have some of our reflections on it. The first person to speak was somebody who's been very much in the spotlight of all of this, Michael Powell, who is chair of the Federal Communications Commission. Michael Powell is said to be and has been up until very recently a strong proponent of nearly total deregulation, i.e. letting corporations own even more of the radio television stations than they now do. And here's some of what he had to say.
How do you look at the marketplace? What kind of voices should count? How much concentration has there really been, rather than the assumption that they've been in what markets and in what manner? Because if we don't have that, we don't have a media ownership rule foundation. I'll give it to you right now. Everyone in this room, I'm sure, concedes and stipulates that media diversity, viewpoint diversity, are some of the most important cherished values in our American system. We can talk about that all day. I agree with you. That alone is not going to justify the rules before the court. I would agree that if this is done wrong, it could have significant consequences for American discourse and democracy. I would also submit if it isn't done right, the courts will eliminate the rules anyway. We'll suffer the consequences just as sincerely, just as badly.
Michael Powell.
That was FCC.
Go ahead, Robert.
That was the chair of the FCC, Michael Powell. And it's an interesting presentation that he made because he basically exculpated his prior behavior as the head of the FCC in regard to the conglomeration of fewer and fewer corporations owning the media. He said that the burden should be placed on programmers. You could put the blame on Congress. He said that as much as people may complain about content and concentration, that it's not as important as metrics. And once again, he said that's because of congressional legislation and because of court rulings. And in his repeated emphasis on empirical data to justify the rules that have traditionally governed the FCC in regard to such ineffable things as public interest, it appears that Powell has very craftily or very cleverly set himself up as not being the pro-corporate leader of the commission that previous history would indicate that he may well be.
You know what this reminded me of, Robert? It reminded me of the Bush administration's approach to things like global warming, where they keep saying, well, yes, it seems to be a bad problem, but we need more studies. We need more data. We need to quantify this down to the last possible mathematical equation before we're really going to do anything. And as Robert McChesney said later on in the presentation this morning, there's some things you just can't do a quantitative analysis for.
I'm sorry, Larry. We had some transmission difficulties. I was not able to hear you clearly.
Can you hear me now?
I'm hearing you now with a delay.
Sorry. I don't know what's going on there. Let me just get your reaction to this again, because I think it's an important point, if you can hear me. Robert McChesney's statement later on, that there's some things you can't find quantitative data on, but there is an abundance of data, as some of the other people were saying, like Amy Mitchell, that television news is increasingly trashy, that even increasingly trashy as it is, there is less and less of it, and the more corporate conglomerates you get, the more superficial, yellow tape type, you know, crime stories you have passing themselves off as news. Juan Gonzalez made this point as well. But Michael Powell and the other Republicans in the Bush administration on many issues, including global warming, keep saying, we need more data, we need more studies.
Well, Larry, you bring about a very fascinating point. In fact, one that was underscored by the irony of some of the presenters at the parts of today's session on media ownership at the Columbia Law School that we've been listening to. And I refer specifically to the presentation by the vice president for television stations of the Fox Network, Ellen Agress, who spoke saying almost exactly the same words as Powell. She also stressed the need for the empirical definition of philosophical concepts such as public interest, such as diversity, such as localism. Anyone who has watched Fox News sees a certain consistency no matter what city it's in, and that might be an issue that is contrary to localism. But the delicious irony of the Fox vice president's statement in conjunction with the presence of Commissioner Chairman Powell is that only about 18 months ago, that is in July, that is in July, that is in July,
we're beginning to lose the audio.
Allowing them to buy 10 television stations from the Chris Kraft Corporation. They bought stations such as Channel 9 in New York, stations in Los Angeles.
Robert, I'm afraid we're having a real hookup and echo problem. We're going to have to try to cure. Robert Knight was first hearing some weird feedback from here and delay, and now we're getting a total echo on him as we get it back, so we'll try to work on that. While we're trying to get Robert Knight back coherently and not echoing all over the stratosphere from New York, we'll listen to another presenter this morning, Michael Copps, who is a Democratic commissioner, one of those who dissents against increased deregulation. Here's what he had to say on the panel, some of it.
And I am frankly concerned, as most of you already know, about consolidation in the media, and particularly concerned that we are on the verge of dramatically altering our nation's media landscape without the kind of debate and analysis that these issues so clearly merit. I respectfully disagree that this is so routine an exercise, because I think this particular biennial review is a watershed biennial review. And while we will do it again in a couple of years under the review and under the statute, I think this is going to set the direction for quite some time to come. And I think if we do significantly change those rules in this review, they won't be easily undone if we make a mistake 2 years hence. Why am I concerned? I'm concerned because I don't believe we have the foggiest idea right now about the potential consequences of our actions. We have a model to look at for what eliminating concentration protections might do to the media in the radio industry. And many believe that the elimination of radio consolidation rules has created serious problems. We'll hear more about this from today's panels. Undoubtedly, some efficiencies were created that allowed broadcast media companies to operate more profitably, maybe kept some stations from going dark. But the consolidation went, I think, far beyond what anybody expected. Conglomerates now own dozens, even hundreds, and in one case, more than 1,000 stations all across the country. More and more programming originates hundreds of miles away from listeners and from their communities. And there are 34% fewer radio station owners today than there were before safeguards were eliminated. The majority of markets today are dominated by oligopoly, and all this in only a few years after 1996.
Federal Communications Commissioner Michael Copps. The Federal Communications Commission, we should point out to listeners, has 5 members on it. It is always a majority of those who are of the president's political persuasion. In this case, of course, George W. Bush and the Republicans have 3 commissioners. The Democrats have 2. And that would indicate rather smoother sailing than has been the case in recent years for deregulation, although it should be pointed out that the last deregulation, 1996, took place under a Democratic presidential administration. Another of those who made a presentation this morning was Charles Lewis of the Center for Public Integrity. He said that as far as he was concerned, and he's from an organization that studies the interplay of things like campaign finance, corporate contributions, and public policy, Charles Lewis said that there were 3 major questions as far as he was concerned that should be discussed and thought about today.
So
I would just ask three questions today. And they're very simple. Have the FCC commissioners given adequate explanation to the public about why giving billions more dollars to the existing broadcast companies is in the national interest? Has the FCC given adequate consideration to the non-economic impact of those proposed rules on our democracy and on the craft of journalism itself? And finally, is the FCC sufficiently objective and independent to render such judgments given its past history? It is not for me to answer these questions, but to let time and history itself be the ultimate judge. Thank you.
Charles Lewis of the Center for Public Education. Robert Knight, are you back with us? No.
I'm not sure, Larry.
Yes, you are.
I'm speaking with a forked tongue because I'm hearing an echo as I speak myself. But if you can hear me, then I'm content with that, and I'll assume that the rest of the people listening to this special coverage on the Pacifica Radio Network at website pacifica.org can also hear me.
Well, speaking of the website pacifica.org, we might do better in these broadcasts, technically, number one, if we got back the ability to do them. It's been years since we were able to have any significant national programming on this network, but one of the elements is financial support to get us the equipment and the backing we need to do it. And we're hoping as many as people who appreciate our caring this day-long forum today from Columbia University will go to our website, www.pacifica.org, and make a pledge to this non-commercial organization. You may have noticed one of the speakers or one of the questioners from the audience said, why isn't there any national coverage of an important forum like this today? There was a lot of shuffling and avoidance of that question on the part of the panelists from Viacom. But basically the answer was they don't care enough to do it. Well, we care enough to do it, and we need some support in order to do it. So can we get some folks, anyway, logging on to www.pacifica.org and helping us out financially with this broadcast? That's what we hope will happen.
Robert, that's Larry Binsky in California. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And, Larry, I'd just like to complete a point of irony that I was making before in regard to the co-appearances of the chair of the FCC, Michael Powell, and Ellen Agress, the senior vice president for television stations of the Fox Network. They both made the same point that we need new ways to enforce these waning regulations of the FCC with empirical data, more than complaining about concentration of ownership and diversity and such. And the irony of it is the fact that her corporation, Fox, on July 25th, 2001, received a very generous package from the FCC in regard to the purchase of 10 more television stations from the Chris Craft Corporation. They bought stations in New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, San Antonio, Texas, Portland, Phoenix, and a number of other major cities across the country. And in so doing, they went beyond the 35% national television audience cap. However, the FCC gave Fox a variance, an easement, a forgiveness on that limit, and said that they did not intend even to look into the importance of violating that limit because of the possibility that the courts would rule it away, or that it would be moved out of the FCC regulations. And as a result of those FCC-approved purchases, Fox went up to 41% of the national aggregate national audience, well beyond the 35% by which most stations are limited.
Joining us now is Gregory Allen Howard, who is a screenwriter whose credits include Remember the Titans and Ali. Today he's with us representing a group called the Center for the Creative Community, which represents many in the Hollywood entertainment industry, actors, actresses concerned about FCC deregulation. Thank you for joining this Pacifica broadcast, Gregory Howard.
All right, thank you.
What is your take on this whole deregulation matter that is the subject of this forum and of the FCC's potential action?
Well, I mean, obviously, when there is a concentration, or in this case, a super concentration of control of limited resources in the media like this, or when you have this sort of coverage that you were just alluding to at Fox, it's never good. It's never good when all these entities basically are being paid by the same paycheck.
Why not?
Well, I mean, obviously that cuts down on diversity of thought. Now, supposedly in the modern world today, all these are quasi-independent stations, but you know, in truth, they're still drawing the same paycheck from the same company, even in markets where ostensibly they supposedly compete with one another. They're still part of the same company, and it's never good.
Have you noticed any specific instances that you can tell about in your career or in the career of other successful screenwriters with social conscience, as we might call it, and I think we can call it? Have you noticed any instances where media consolidation has basically tried to shut people up?
I don't know that that they would do anything quite that obvious. Now, let me put it that way. Not that I know of, that it's really just that obvious. It's more that there's just fewer places to take your ideas. And this is particularly true in television. Seemingly, you know, the 100-channel universe, one would think that would make it easy to sell a program because there's this seeming diversity of these many outlets, when in point of fact it's still only about four or five outlets, and it's it's very, 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 very sort of cliquish and clannish, and you know, the doors really aren't that open. I mean, just think of how much better it would really be if instead of these 100 probably owned by five or six, was 100 owned by 100.
What would you like to see take place versus what is actually taking place? A sense of greater concentration of bigger and bigger titans owning more and more things, like movie theaters and television stations and television production companies and internet sites even, although that seems to be something of a relief. They keep saying, well, there's the internet. But what would you like to see instead of this increased concentration, given the way the economic system of the United States is set up?
Well, unfortunately, you cannot unscramble eggs. So, what I would really like to see, I'd like to see the situation that was in New York probably 100 years ago when there were like 30 dailies. Now, unfortunately, we can't go back to that. But what we can do is stop this, again, this what I call super concentration of really limited, you know, media resources and entities. And I just think it's bad, and I think that the FCC should not be approving this super concentration. I just think it's bad for diversity of thought, opinion, and everything else.
One of the things that the political system seems to respond to in this country is celebrity, because so much of our country's information delivery systems are built around celebrity. Do you expect to be organizing and having people from the Writers Guild, the Producers Guild, the Center for Creative Community, going to Washington or to Richmond, Virginia, where they're going to have their hearing, and testifying?
Well, I can't. I'm a member in good standing at the Writers Guild, but I can't speak and say what the Writers Guild is going to do. They're pretty much on record about how they feel about this concentration issue. As far as the creative community is concerned, yeah, we have a position, against the concentration of these media outlets, and basically under two or three companies, and then they control, you know, what is known as the media in the United States, and of course we're against that, and you know, we'll make our positions known as we have already.
All right, thank you very much for joining us today on this Pacifica broadcast. Gregory Allen Howard, screenwriter whose credits include Remember the Titans and Ali. We want to try now, with trepidation technically, to go back to New York, and you, Robert Knight, in the interview you did with Jeffrey Chester. Why don't you tell us who he is and what that's about?
He is the head of the Center for Digital Democracy and one of many activists who has been encouraging for the public to be involved in the decisions the FCC is about to make. We spoke about the overriding issues surrounding media ownership, and particularly those that are being addressed in today's conference. And we spoke about, among other things, how it's not just a theoretical concept about concentration of ownership and the arguments that Chairman Powell makes in regard to competition between broadcast and broadband, but something that very intimately affects politics and social interactions as we know it. Here's some of what Jeff Chester of the Digital Democracy Center had to say.
I think one of the biggest dangers here is that a handful of giant companies will control all the outlets. It will be harder to get alternative messages out. And that's why there's tremendous amount at stake for Progressive. Progressive already have a hard time getting their message out. They're going to have an even more difficult time as these four or five big companies swallow up not just old media, but control much of the future of the Internet itself. As the Internet evolves into a broadband high-speed medium, these big media companies have their eye on it and are lobbying that they can control the future evolution of the net. So unless Progressives intervene, our messages are going to be further marginalized. And these big media companies want to create a system that is solely focused on the need to promote advertising and marketing. I call it the brandwashing of America. We are in danger of seeing an entire generation of Americans being raised in this very powerful electronic media environment controlled by more or less four companies, only focused on encouraging self-satisfaction and consumption. There are real dangers here. Without a public policy to ensure there can be others who can own major media outlets, without a policy to protect the future of the Internet, then we, the progressive community and others who are concerned about the future of our democracy, will be further cut off.
You're suggesting that broadcast will become less nutritious politically. What does it mean for artists and creators who are trying to present their messages as well?
Look, the FCC and the media lobby are playing a tremendous game here. They point to cable and they point to the Internet and they say, we don't need any more limits on how many television or radio or newspapers one company can own because there are plenty of ways for people to express themselves using these new alternative media. But the fact of the matter is they have lobbied already and are lobbying to change the very structure of cable, to change the very structure of the Internet. Artists and other creators who right now rely on the Internet are going to find very soon that the Internet begins to reflect the economics of today's traditional media. Only those with tremendous resources will be able in the future to effectively stream their messages to users. These big media companies want to create an electronic toll booth over the Internet, and indeed Michael Powell is going to permit that. Last March, the Federal Communications Commission under Powell approved a new policy for cable broadband that will eventually affect DSL, telephone-based Internet access as well, that will allow these corporate giants to place a new lock on the diversity of the Internet. That's why artists have a lot at stake here.
Commissioner Powell, the head of the Federal Communications Commission, says that there is indeed increased communication because of the advent of the new technologies. But with those new technologies, DSL, Internet, broadband, is there an analogous conglomeration of ownership, and does that offset the competition to which Powell refers?
Well, absolutely. This is where Michael Powell, the chairman, is being intellectually dishonest. He and the big media companies know very well that the new policy on the Internet that the FCC has embraced will allow basically two major cable companies, Comcast, which just swallowed up AT&T, and AOL Time Warner. Those two companies will control the majority of the future access to the Internet. The Internet is going to increasingly become under the control of these very same corporate giants. So you have a very likelihood that in one town soon, if Michael Powell has his way, in a single community, one company will be able to own the TV stations, the radio stations, the newspaper, the cable system, and become the principal Internet service provider as well. Tremendous political power in the hands of a few companies, all focused simply on marketing and advertising, no public interest or public service requirements, and, perhaps more importantly, no policy to prevent these giants from discriminating any content provider, including nonprofits.
How does that affect the traditional safeguards the FCC was entrusted with to provide competition, diversity, and localism? And how would the proposed changes affect that mandate?
Well, the media lobby, Boston, the NBC, and Viacom, CBS, and Disney ABC, have tried to undermine the FCC safeguard over the last few years. They've gone to Congress, and more importantly, they've gone to the courts, and they have gotten the courts to tell the FCC that it needs to prove why these rules, these safeguards, are necessary. Now, under the Republicans and Democrats, the Federal Communications Commission is basically an appendage of the media lobby. The FCC is incapable of really representing the interests of the public, in part because there's a revolving door. There's no former chairman of the FCC who is not working in one way or another for the media companies they used to oversee. So the FCC has to come up with a new policy rationale for why these safeguards are necessary. But frankly, they are constitutionally incapable of doing so. Michael Powell doesn't see the need for any rules whatsoever, which is why we think the public, and we hope that your listeners will contact their members of Congress, unless people in Congress speak out, and right now we're not even hearing really from liberal or progressive Democrats, unless members of Congress speak out, tell Michael Powell to stop, slow down, reconsider these radical proposals, then we will see sweeping changes in our media system that will make the goals that progressives have for a greater democratic society much more unattainable.
Jeff Chester, are you suggesting that the proposed new rules at the FCC would be to eliminate the enforcement of rules as they've traditionally been known in broadcast and communications?
What Fox and NBC and Viacom have just told the FCC in this proceeding is to end all of the public interest rules on media ownership. And of course, this is a good example of the kind of arrogance and corruption we have with our media politics today. These networks have received all of their licenses for free. They've gotten big hunks of the public spectrum, yet they're now saying, well, now that we have ours, we don't think we should abide by any of the safeguards or rules at all. So, yes, we are likely to see a sweeping overhaul of all of the rules at the FCC, if not this year, then in the next few years, in the absence of advocacy. Progressives traditionally have not focused on media politics, yet we've been concerned about issues like civil rights and the environment and health care. But the future of those issues ultimately depends on our ability to get our messages out in the media, both in the mainstream and new media as well. And unless we intervene here, as I said, our voices will be dimmed as this growing commercial colossus places a stranglehold over all of the media outlets, both old and new.
In considering the relationship between broadcast and broadband, I'd like to look at another synthesis here between broadcast and an even older technology, that of the print and the press. How does the ruling in regard to ownership affect the ownership of newspapers and radio and TV stations, and what social effect does that have?
Well, one of the most important safeguards still on the books is the rule that prevents a single company from owning a TV station and a newspaper in the same town. A quarter century ago, people at the FCC, actually the Republican chairman, thought that was very dangerous if a single company could control the two most important outlets for information and public expression. Almost all the media companies, including the New York Times, which is still not reported on its political lobbying at the FCC, all the big media companies are asking that that rule be overturned. So you're very likely to see soon companies being able to own the newspaper and the TV station and several radio stations in the same town, more homogenous news coverage, fewer resources for reporting, because they're not going to add reporters to the TV station and the newspaper. They're going to add reporters to where they make the most money. And the danger here is that newspapers will more and more begin to reflect the journalism of if it leads, it leads television. And so we'll all be much poorer for it.
Are there any empirical studies that demonstrate the effects on journalism of consolidated ownership?
Well, I hope that your listeners will go on to the website of the Writers Guild of America West, that's WGA.org, or my own website at democraticmedia.org, and read some of the public interest filings. The Writers Guild of America West filing, which represents all the people that write for television and movies in this country, they're saying there's no competition and diversity whatsoever. In terms of the newspaper, the future of newspapers, the Newspaper Guild and others have filed that chronicle well the evisceration of the quality of journalism because of media ownership and consolidation. So there's plenty of information out there. The problem is that Michael Powell simply doesn't really want to pay attention to it because it doesn't fit in to his own ideological blinders, which is why we need listeners to contact Congress and have members of Congress yelling and screaming and saying, this is an important issue to me. We need to have more research, more analysis, more debate. Stop this unprecedented giveaway to the media giants.
What is the relationship of the Federal Communications Commission to the operation and content of the Internet?
Well, the Federal Communications Commission ultimately regulates the plumbing, so to speak, of the Internet. I mean, the Internet grew up as a medium that was specifically designed to be part of the telephone network. The people that, in part, designed the Internet envisioned it as this kind of open, non-discriminatory network, recognizing that as the Internet traveled over the telephone line, that was the perfect medium to promote openness and democracy, because the telephone lines are required by rules of the FCC to act in a non-discriminatory manner. When you make a phone call, you don't have a big cable or broadcast company saying, hey, you can't make that call, or I'm going to slow down your phone call and make my call the fastest. Well, the FCC is abandoning that kind of neutral architecture as it regulates the future of the Internet in the broadband environment. Very soon, the dial-up Internet that most people now use will become like the dirt road, for good or for bad. Broadband, this high-speed multimedia service, will be the dominant medium in terms of the Internet. The biggest cable companies and the biggest telephone companies have lobbied the FCC and are securing new policies from Michael Powell that will allow them to control the future of the Internet's digital destiny. Big cable companies will be able to speed up access to their websites and slow down the access, say, to Pacifica's website in the absence of a public policy. Now, the ACLU and many public interest groups, including my own, have taken the FCC's new proposal on broadband cable to court. But in the absence of activism, the Internet is going to be placed on the endangered media species list soon.
Are you suggesting that that single ownership could lead to discriminatory browsing?
Oh, there's no question that the vision that the big media companies, particularly companies like Comcast and AOL, Time Warner, have for the future of the Internet is to create what I call a pay-per-packet or pay-per-view environment. The whole AOL merger, despite the downturn in the stock market, is based on that kind of theory, and so is Comcast's merger with AT&T. These big media conglomerates plan to impose a new business model in Internet access that will charge all websites if they want to be transported efficiently down those private wires. So we're going to see further privatization of the Internet, a new pricing structure that will make Internet services much more unaffordable for progressive and alternative sites.
Are there examples or types of Internet behavior that a person might even now notice as they click through websites?
Well, you already see that the big media companies can afford to store their content. It's called caching. In order to make that content...
That would be C-A-C-H-E, not C-A-S-H, or maybe it is
right.
Both.
It's both. It's cash and carry, yes. But look, you're not seeing this yet per se, but this FCC rulemaking, the big media mergers going on like Comcast, the lobbying on the future of the Internet is all part of a plan that will allow a handful of media giants to control both old and new media, and to reshape the new media in particular to reflect the economics that best favor their own interests. On my website, for example, democraticmedia.org, they will see already cable industry plans to begin imposing this kind of pricing structure over the Internet.
Well, as this conference proceeds and as the Federal Communications Commission proceeds with the proposed rulemaking changes, How can citizens and those concerned about diversity and access bring together the issues of a regulatory body and the constitutional issues, such as those that were raised in the case of Associated Press v. U.S., that resulted in a ruling that said that freedom to publish means freedom for all and not just for some. Freedom to publish is guaranteed by the Constitution, but freedom to combine to keep others from publishing is not. How does one bring the regulatory process back in line with the constitutional process as rendered in that ruling?
Well, this is really a battle about what the First Amendment really means for citizens and others in the United States. If Michael Powell and the big media companies have their way, then the public will simply be treated as consumers with no First Amendment rights to a diverse media system, and there'll be a degradation of journalism as well. It will no longer be a watchdog, which it occasionally is. It'll be more of a lapdog. This policy will affect every community. It will affect how information is transmitted, the kind of coverage we have, the checks on private and public power. So the public really does need to get involved. There are many ways they can express themselves personally through websites such as my own or Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting's website, fair.org. They can file at the Federal Communications Commission. We have until February 3rd. They can write and contact their members of Congress. But they really need to urge their local officials to hold the town meeting. What does all this mean for their community? Will their community be a place where there is some kind of media democracy, or will it just have cookie-cutter journalism and entertainment all controlled from Madison Avenue in Hollywood?
Thank you very much. Our guest has been Jeff Chester, the executive director of the Center for Digital Democracy, which, at least for the nonce, is browsable at the web address of democraticmedia.org. I'm Robert Knight in New York.
And I'm Larry Vinsky in Berkeley, California, as we wait the Forum on Media Ownership afternoon session being broadcast to you live here on Pacifica Radio. We're joined by former Federal Communications Commissioner Nicholas Johnson, a legendary Federal Communications Commissioner back in the day. What were the exact dates that you were on the FCC, Nick Johnson? I can't quite remember.
Larry, 1966 to 73. And I spent those 7 years writing dissenting opinions, bemoaning how the agency had just given in to the industry and wasn't standing up to the public interest. And now we look back on those years as the golden age of FCC regulation. Compared with what they're doing now, it's kind of last man out, turn off the lights. I don't see that there's any interest in anything back there anymore. Although Commissioner Copps does give us a little bit of hope, perhaps. I'll add another website to the list that Jeff Chester just provided, and that's my own, which is just www.nicholasjohnson.org. Since I've never done anything successfully that was a com, I decided I should be an org, so there I am.
You're a com or an org now?
I'm an org. I never have done anything that was calm. You see, that's the problem. So I felt that would be a misrepresentation.
Well, you've been a professor at the University of Iowa Law School for many years, and that's certainly a successful thing to have been, Nicholas Johnson. But let me get your take on this. It's 30 years since you were on the commission.
Well, let's go back even further than 30 years with a quote from a very prescient congressman in 1926 when they were considering the predecessor to the 1934 Communications Act. It was the 1927 Radio Act, as it was then called. And here's what he had to say on the issue that you guys are discussing today. Quote, "American thought and American politics will be largely at the mercy of those who operate these stations. For publicity is the most powerful weapon that can be wielded in a republic. And when such a weapon is placed in the hands of one or a single selfish group is permitted to either tacitly or otherwise acquire ownership or dominate these broadcasting stations throughout the country, then woe be to those who dare to differ with them. It will be impossible to compete with them in reaching the ears of the American people." Now, there was somebody who was smart enough to see that. His name was Luther Johnson, no relation, congressman. smart enough to see that back before anybody could possibly have a sense of what even this technology of radio was, let alone what it was going to become. And he saw back in 1926 the same problems that we have today, and Congress was smart enough back then to put limits in the what became the FCC.